Welcome in, latest episode of that SEC podcast. I'm your host, Mike Bratton. I go by SEC Mike on the Twitters, and there's our good friend, Stephen Lassen, senior editor, Athlon Sports. Stephen, how are you, my friend?
Mike, I am doing great. It's good to start the week talking to you. It's National Signing Day, the second version. This Wednesday, we've got Hawaii starting spring practice today. So the world of college football never stops, my friend. How are you?
Bad. That's how irrelevant the second National Signing Day is, Stephen. I've completely forgot about it. And I mean, how many guys do you think over under SEC actually sign in this second window?
You know, I looked earlier today, and I believe that there are two prospects from the 24/7 top 150 that have yet to sign.
Okay.
So we're looking at, like, you know, probably like a handful of top 300 prospects. So not many. I think there may be a transfer commitment here or there. So I think maybe the biggest thing that I'm taking away from this is it's like kind of nice to have some roster clarity. I know you and I were working on some things for next season, but it'll be nice to kind of start to get the picture, the puzzle pieces filled in to figure out who exactly is back and gone and transfers in and out for 2025.
Yes, fingers crossed, Stephen, that some of these teams actually start to fill out their online depth charts. That would be super. But you know who is super, Stephen? Shout out Cousin JR. What a legend that guy is. He should, even before the show, he's giving out memberships. This time, Jesse, welcome to the family. We appreciate you, Cousin JR, for donating that. But hey, so Stephen's on today. And Stephen and I thought at the almost the same moment we emailed each other and said, hey, how about we do some SEC quarterback rankings? We're going to let Steven handle it. So all your hate mail, all your nasty comments, send them exactly to Steven Lassen. Leave me out of it. I'm just here to do the Cousin Shane part of the show and rip the list and say, oh, that guy's got to be higher. Oh, that guy, everybody's got to be higher. No one moves down on a Cousin Shane list. They only move up. That's nonsensical. But I'm going to be that guy this time.
Mike, I have threatened to do this before for our all-conference teams, and it's to basically post first-team all-SEC and post every possible quarterback in the SEC, every possible defensive back, every defensive lineman. You get the point, because everybody wins in that scenario. Everybody's a first-team all-SEC selection, but in the big picture, Mike, I think this is a great year for quarterbacks in the SEC. I mean, I think 1 through 16, there is a lot to be excited about for almost every team. There's some potential. There's some wild cards. There's some super talented quarterbacks. What the heck do you do with? So excited to do this, but also excited to see like how this list might evolve after we get to spring practice, what happens when we get into the summer, when we have some more intel on some of these teams.
All right, so we'll get into that in just a second. As always, got to remind the cousins, we're brought to you by MyBookie. I know it's college football's over, but NFL, we still got one Sunday left, Super Bowl Sunday, of course. So if you haven't already, go on over to mybookie.ag, the online sports book. That's the website that you put in, mybookie.ag. Give them that promo code, that, THATSEC, that SEC over at MyBookie. That's so they know we sent you over there. But before we get to your quarterback rankings, Stephen, how about real quick, a couple things I wanted to hit on. I thought I was prepared. Maybe I'm not. I told you I was the Cousin Shane of the show today. Oh, we were talking about this off air. So Ryan Grubb, offensive coordinator, back and to the left to Alabama. He was technically there for a couple weeks, and then he left for the Seattle Seahawks, I believe. Now he's back. He's been with Coach Kalen DeBoer for years and years. I think they go back decades. What could this possibly do for Alabama? I'm going to throw up old DeBoer. DeBoering's, hopefully he's not as DeBoering as this guy. But what could this possibly do? No Milrow. We got our offensive coordinator. We wanted all along. And for those that didn't know, I'm sure, Stephen, you remember this, but Nick Saban even tried to hire Ryan Grubb. And this was before, while he was obviously Alabama's head coach, before the big run that Washington had in 2023 under Grubb and obviously Kalen DeBoer. So Ryan Grubb's been a target here for Alabama for 4 or 5 years, seems like.
Absolutely. I think this is a huge win for Kalen DeBoer and Alabama to get Ryan Grubb actually to Tuscaloosa, and hopefully he stays. Now, I would assume that the NFL doesn't come calling, considering he was dismissed from the Seahawks. But I look at it like this, like, you know, DeBoer and Grubb were the brain trust behind that Washington offense that was so good and led them to play in the national championship. So getting that brain trust back together, getting Nick Sheridan away from the play sheet, and you still keep Jamarcus Shepherd around to coach receivers, your offensive brain trust is significantly better this year. And in the era where head coaches have so much on their plates with transfer portal, NIL, all that stuff, Grubb is such a valuable right-hand man for Kalen DeBoer. And so I think it's just adding some brain trust, kind of taking something off of DeBoer, and I think certainly getting that band back together that led Washington to the offense that we saw in the national championship. It just seems like a big win, and especially in a year where you're going to have a new quarterback taking over, the offensive acumen that you have there with DeBoer and Grubb is really solid.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you this, and this may be a tough one to answer because we don't even know who the next Alabama quarterback is. We're about to find out via Stephen's rankings here. But who do you think will be the bigger impact new face, however you want to say that? I know that's like a weird way of saying it. But the new starting quarterback or getting Ryan Grubb, which one do you think will have a bigger impact on Alabama just next season?
Man, that's a tough call. I kind of think I would go with Ryan Grubb right now just because I think the Grubb-DeBoer combo, that offense that they ran, and they've been running it like at Fresno and Washington, they've been able to get the most out of their quarterback. So I think whoever starts a quarterback is already starting on a much better baseline than they had last season. So I think his arrival is significant and probably a little bit more than the quarterback right now, largely because, I mean, I think we know who probably starts, but I think it could get interesting depending on how fast Keelan Russell develops this offseason.
Right. It should also be noted, you know, the transfer they got from Washington, Austin Mack. So that was a guy that you'd have to believe Ryan Grubb was really high on as well. If they were going to sign him at Washington and they wanted him to, and obviously they got him to transfer to Alabama. So, you know, he could be the starter. That wouldn't stun me either. So a lot of possibilities for Alabama, a lot of possibilities, Stephen, for Oklahoma. How about this real quick? Brett Venables going to call his own shot back against the wall. He's calling the defense, Stephen. They didn't get Jim Knowles. Oklahoma fans say they didn't want him. They destroyed these comments with Jim Knowles for a month, but they didn't want that. He's a $3 million overrated, Stephen. We could do better than that. Well, they have done better than that, really, because Brent Venables, I think, is a hell of a better defensive coordinator than Jim Knowles. But you just said it yourself. I mean, there's just so much that goes with being a head coach in today's modern age. So taking that into consideration, what's your thoughts on Brent Venables calling the plays next season on the defensive side of the football for Oklahoma? Is that a positive, or will that turn out to be a negative somehow?
I'm going to contradict myself here as much as I like the Alabama thing. So I think it's actually a great thing if you're Oklahoma, because I mean, Venables is one of the best, if not the best defensive mind in college football. And I think about almost like Vanderbilt in this scenario, like last season, like Clark Lee's back against the wall. You've got to win. And he took matters into his own hands and called the defense, and defense was better. It allowed, you know, they hired Jerry Kill and they hired Tim Beck. The offense got better. Like, yes, you are taking on more, but at the same time, in a critical season, if you want to get to 2026 and 2027 as the head coach, you've got to get through 2025. And so I think this is a good thing for Oklahoma. Also, I think, you know, the financials of Arbuckle's deal is he's going to be a, you know, incredibly high paid coordinator. He basically is the head coach of the offense at this point. And so you can let him manage the offense. You can worry about the defense. You've got somebody like Wes Goodwin, who was with you at Clemson. He's been a defensive coordinator. Also, Nate Drayling, the linebackers coach they hired, really did a nice job a couple years ago when he was at New Mexico State as defensive coordinator. So he was in a little bit of a tough spot last year as the interim coach at Utah State, but I think he's a really promising coach. So I think their defensive acumen, as far as Venables calling it, the assistants, really solid. And in a make or break year, taking matters into your own hands, probably the best situation for Venables in Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is just me wildly speculating, but do you think it would benefit Venables to have someone like Bob Stoops, who, you know, he's still very close to that program. And now with the new rules, as I understand it, Stevie, you could have like literally unlimited coaches. We don't have to call them analysts anymore. I'm not saying you hire Bob Stoops because that could be a mess for if things go sideways, guess who the interim is, you know what I mean? But that might be an upgrade, but just someone that maybe is not there every day watching practice, but, or heck, maybe he is like in the spring and just giving out suggestions to Brent Venables. Could you, because Venables doesn't seem to be a guy with a massive ego. A lot of coaches, you know, they would not put their ego aside for things like that, but could you see and it doesn't even have to be Bob Stoops, but maybe because Venables is now going to have his fingers all over the defense, which he did already, but now he's doing the play calling as well, that maybe he brings in someone to, even if it is technically an analyst, to kind of assist him with the overall operation?
I don't see any downside to that, do you? Like it almost seems like in this era, you don't want too many cooks in the kitchen necessarily, but you also want somebody who can maybe help you with some of the big picture things of the program. Like you may get a phone call that you got to deal with some transfer thing. You got an NIL thing. You've got this booster thing. Like you're dealing with a lot. And so just having somebody to help you kind of manage some of these things on a day-to-day basis, or just take a couple things off your plate so that Venables can study Texas tape in the middle of the week. I don't think there's any downside to that. So, I mean, whether it's proven Hall of Fame type coach like Stoops or some other head coach like a Jerry Kill type, I think that'd be a smart move for Venables if he would be able to pull that off.
Mm-hmm. And then one other thing I wanted to ask you about, Stephen, Matt Rhule, Nebraska coach, kind of made waves over the weekend. Sounds like Nebraska's not going to do a spring game because they're scared to death. I thought Big Ten wasn't scared of SEC anymore, Steven. They don't want to do spring game because they're afraid people are going to watch it and say, oh, I want that player, this player, and tamper. And I don't think Nebraska's that coveted of a roster to begin with. But what's your thoughts on that? Do you think this is the way it's going? I mean, heck, Lane Kiffin is basically already taking that approach, and they did a dunk contest for the spring game. I just remember, Phil Steele. I guess he doesn't watch the games live or whatever. He just watches them back week after week. And he was like sending off all these mad tweets of how worthless the Ole Miss spring game was last year. I thought I was dying laughing, but be that as it may, is that essentially where we're going with spring games, you think, or do you think Matt Rhule is an outlier here?
I think that's probably where it's going. To some extent, Mike, they've always been kind of exhibition types. I mean, like the scoring system's kind of wacky. They're kind of geared towards like offense too. Like, you know, like I said, like you get these weird scoring systems. You don't want to show too much, but you also want to get your guys like some live reps. So it's kind of always been a show, but also I think being worried about injuries, and you're seeing like Ohio State's going to start spring practice later this year than they have because of the national championship run. So your season going longer cuts into your springtime. You got to get your guys some rest before another long season. So I think anytime you can cut back on snaps, you cut back on the potential to reduce injuries, but also the transfer thing too. Like until there's probably a little bit more clarity around the rules and the portal, I think you may see more of this. The other, you know, thing that's been proposed before that I kind of like is some kind of exhibition. I know it's adding extra games and adding snaps to the players, but if you really want to find out a little bit more about your team, like you could scrimmage not somebody in your conference, but someone else.
All right, we're up, Steven. Hopefully. I don't know what in the world's going on anymore, but
is Cousin Shane sabotaging this from the vacation?
Let me double check here, and let's see if we are live on the YouTubes. All right, I think we are. Looks like we're good. All right, right where we were leaving off. Let's just do the whole show over again. Just kidding. Let's get into Stephen Ladd. We didn't even get into number 16. So let's start right there, Stephen. Who is the number 16th SEC quarterback, according to Stephen Lassen?
I got Zach Calzada of Kentucky at 16. Pretty rare to see somebody who may be a third-time starter at three different programs in the SEC. So I like the experience. Like the fact that he was a prolific passer last season at Incarnate Word. I think the questions for this team come from, there's just a ton of new here. New receivers, new offensive line, also the questions at offensive coordinator, Bush Hamden, and how far can this offense progress? And also Cutter Bowley too. Like, how does this quarterback battle shake out? So I think on paper, if you're Kentucky, I think you have to be encouraged by having somebody who has so much experience coming into your program, and you also have another quarterback with some potential. The question is, how does it shake out? And I think right now I have Calzada at 16.
Yeah, and also this is just such a off season of turmoil is a strong word, but maybe not. You know, with having to rebuild the offensive line, rebuild the receiving core. Running backs. I mean, if you could answer all those questions for me, maybe we'd have a better indication of Zach Calzada and how good he'll be for the Kentucky Wildcats. Oh, and we're not even 100% positive that he will be the starting quarterback, thanks to, you know, Cutter Boyle, who I think that's how you say his name, who looked pretty good at moments, but he's a young guy. I mean, I certainly think they brought in Zach Calzada to start. We just had Nick Roush, Kentucky Sports Radio, on last week, and I asked him that same thing, Stephen. Where, you know, if they're gonna, who would he bet on to be the starting quarterback? He said it would be Calzada. So I'm not doubting that he will be, but just so many unknowns with Kentucky. I don't know that there's anywhere else to go other than Zach Calzada. And the fact, to your point, Stephen, that this is such a deep year of quarterbacks in the SEC, the number 16 guy on this list, he's beat Nick Saban. Not many other college quarterbacks could say that. So I think that gives you an indication of what a good year this could be for SEC quarterbacks.
Do you think Kentucky is in a better spot with Cutter and Calzada than they were last season? I think they were. But I think, of course, there is the unknown, of course, with how you transfer from FCS to SEC again and how does it work?
I certainly do. I never believed I don't like to bash guys or anything like that, I'm sad that his career is over. But I never believed in Brock Vandegrift. I just never did. And when I say that, I just mean I didn't think he'd like set the world on fire at Kentucky. The way I heard it from people at Georgia was he was closer to the third string than he was starting when he left there. So I figured that would be a disaster for Kentucky. So to your point, yeah, I think Kentucky's quarterback spot is in a much better place this year, whether people realize that or not.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think if anything, if you're going into maybe it's a make or break season, I certainly think there's some pressure on Mark Stoops, maybe more than the last couple years, to have a guy who started and he's been through the SEC a couple times, and you have some transfers coming in to help you restock the offensive line, restock the receiving core, and at running back as well. You could maybe wish like, yeah, sure, you could go out and get a Carson Beck. You could wish you could go out and get like Mark Gronowski, the South Dakota State transfer. But to have a guy who's got that experience in the transfers, like, gives them a kind of a chance to sort of supercharge this improvement right away. And like I said, what might be a critical year for Mark Stoops?
Yeah, shout out to Stephen Up, the other Stephen. He said Shane loved Vandegrift. He did. It was because that damn belt. Built with the phone, cell phone. That was it. That was all Shane needed to see, and he was all about it.
Easy to. we can't doubt the methods because of Shane, because he nailed the Missouri thing a couple years ago. So.
Oh yeah, I mean he's got more hits than he does misses. But all right, so who you got number 15, Stephen?
Kind of hitting on, I think, what is a deep year. I've got Bo Prabhula from Missouri. I love the upside, what I saw at Penn State, change of pace quarterback for Drew Aller, the starter, Prabula was the change of pace guy, nearly 600 rushing yards in two seasons at Penn State. I think the positive side here, I think Kirby Moore, Eli Drinkwitz, they'll figure this out. Like, they will put him in a position to succeed. The only downside right now, just not a lot to go on from him as a full-time passer. He, most of his kind of the best snaps you could probably get out of his Penn State tape is that game against Wisconsin where Drew Aller got hurt and then Prabula had to come in. He threw for 98 yards on 11 completions. So some really promising stuff, but how does it all come together? I like the upside. There is also just a ton of unknown here.
Yeah. I'll tell you right now, Stephen, this is where the hate's going to start. Because Bo is the man, according to people that not really even watch him play. But I get it. Yeah. I mean, he is largely inexperienced, and he's stepping into a position where, you know, he's got to play, and he's got to play well if Missouri's going to. I mean, you just can't in this league. I don't care the schedule. I'll throw it up here. It is, I think, on paper, the best schedule you could possibly get in the SEC in 2025. But you're not going to win 10 games here if you have to work around your quarterback. Your quarterback's got to step up. He doesn't got to be the best quarterback in the country or anything like that, but he's going to have to win you a couple games if you're going to, just like Brady Cook did last year. And even Brady Cook was, I would argue, you know, love that guy, but he didn't have his best season. But still, he had to perform in a number of games to get them to get some wins. So I think this is fair, just based on what we know and stepping into a new situation. But I can already tell you they're not going to like it.
Also, I think worth noting, only two returning starters on the offensive line. No Luther Burden, no Theo Weese. I'm confident. I feel good about what Missouri has on the offensive brain trust, but there is a lot to replace, and there's a lot of unknown here. And that's kind of why I dropped him to 15. Just guys that are more proven at this point. But also, like I said, I mean, I think you could watch him at Penn State, and you could kind of see some Trace McSorley in his game a little bit. And we just haven't seen it over a full season. So I think getting a kind of look at this Missouri offense in the spring is going to be really important, I think, to kind of figuring out where exactly his upside is for this season.
And I know this is probably tough to answer, Stephen, but had Drew Aller, you know, had come out previous and said, hey, I'm going to the NFL. This guy, he probably, without a doubt, he would have stayed at Penn State. He would have been their starting quarterback, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think he would have started for Penn State if that's the case.
Yeah. So again, if you're Mizzou, I think you say, well, they just had two outstanding starting quarterbacks. That's all it was. And now we got one of them.
Missouri's got a pretty solid track record too. Like, I mean, not, I know this is like going like back to the other like coaching staffs and all that, but I mean, you just think like through Missouri's history, like whether it's Brad Smith, Chase Daniel, other guys, like they typically do a pretty good job of finding signal callers. And also I think worth mentioning their depth at quarterback probably better this year. Like if Prabula doesn't work out, Sam Horn will be, you think, close to 100%, and Zoller's coming in, the freshman. Mm-hmm. They have a much better quarterback room in terms of depth than they did last season, with considering the injury in Drew Pine as well.
All right, who is number 14, according to Steven Lassen?
I think this is a guy who could put up some huge numbers, but we haven't seen a lot of him, and that's Blake Chapin at Mississippi State. So I think the first takeaway on this one is Jeff Lebby pretty much handpicked him to be the guy last season. Got off to a good start, got injured, of course, and then that was the end of his season. So I think if you're looking for optimism here, a lot of good stuff early in the season, potential to be even better in another offseason to learn under Jeff Lebby. This offense will produce yards and points. I think the other part of this is, again, how does the offensive line improve? What's the outlook and all the receivers they're bringing in? How does this group mesh together? And certainly, I think just in the big picture for the team, I think Chapin's got to have a good season if this team wants to have any shot at getting to a bowl, given where the defense is. Should also note, too, Luke Kromenhoek, the transfer from Florida State. I really like his upside and like some of the things that I saw at Florida State. I just think that Chapin is probably still your guy for next season.
Yeah, and provided he can stay healthy, there's, I think, an outstanding chance that Blake Shapen may have more passing yards than anybody in the Southeastern Conference. Would you buy that?
I think that's fair. I think we had, what, two quarterbacks get to 4,000 yards in the conference this year? That seems, if he can go stay healthy for 12 games, that seems like a pretty realistic goal in this offense.
Right. And he was, you know, on his way to have, like you said, a big year before he went down. And then I say a lot of things about Jeff Lebby. I love him as a quarterback coach and an offensive play caller. So I think that there may not be a better one in the SEC in terms of quarterbacks coach. Really not. That's Lane Kiffin. That's Josh Heupel. That's Sarkisian included. Jeff Lebby's up there with all of them when it comes to coaching quarterbacks, if you just look at his track record. But one other thing, I know this is kind of off topic a little bit, but when I work these graphics up for the coaches, and apologies if you're just listening and you can't see this, it's just a list of Mississippi State from 2017 all the way to 2024. And, you know, we all know this. They've had massive coaching transition, but, man, when you see it written down like that compared to all the other SEC teams, it's pretty brutal, isn't it? Well, I mean, we're going all the way back to the last year of Dan Mullen. And then I mean, quite frankly, we covered this. I was there for it. I forgot about Joe Moorhead.
You know, yeah.
Like, that almost didn't even happen. There was some wild stuff there. Of course, the Pirate, may he rest in peace. Legend, should be in the College Football Hall of Fame. And then Zach Arnett, that disaster. And now last year, it's just, it's easy to see where Mississippi finds itself given all this massive transition.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's kind of the reason why I would buy 2024 as a year zero for Jeff Lebby, is that you're just going from, you know, the tragedy of Mike Leach passing to Zach Arnett and trying to scramble during the 2023 season, changing schemes and then the roster cycling through, then to get to last season with all that scheme turnover, all the player turnover, and trying to implement your system. It's just, at a place like Mississippi State where it is already very difficult to win, that's a lot of challenges. So that's kind of why I would almost just give Jeff Lebby, not necessarily a pass, but you kind of got to give him a little bit of a grace period here to get this program up and running.
Mm-hmm. All right, so who's number 13 on your list, Steven?
I'm going to go with Ty Simpson. This is hard. It was hard to do the bottom. It's going to get a little harder from here. I think if I knew he was the starter, I would probably move him up a spot or two. I think a lot of potential. Former five-star, the DeBoer, Ryan Grubb offense, I think is going to produce yards, and it's certainly going to produce points. So I like the offense. I like the potential. I like the system. Good offensive line. Good receiving core. There's a lot to like here. The question is he going to be the starter? And that's kind of why I have him at 13 right now.
Yeah, is there any position group that is more intriguing across the SEC heading into spring football than Alabama's quarterback competition, or does that top the list for you?
That would top the list for me, other than like the big uglies at some of these teams. Like, how does Georgia, how does Texas, you know, Ole Miss, like all these teams reloading at the line of scrimmage is really interesting to me. But by far, figuring out how Alabama's quarterback situation shapes up is probably my biggest storyline.
Yeah, and I hate to rip to shred your list as we're only at 13. But is this the one that, again, we've done Calzada, Prabula, Shapen, and now Simpson. I'm not sitting here disagreeing with any of these, but it feels like the one that you could potentially, well, when you get to the bottom, I had Diego Pavia at the bottom of my list last year. What an idiot I am. But is this, I guess what I'm trying to ask is, Ty Simpson at number 13, is this the one you're kind of the least confident about? Because, you know, he could be a monster in this offense.
Yeah, I think of the four so far, I think Simpson and Prabula have a lot of upside and were hard to rank, frankly. I think what the next tier of quarterbacks, there's some quarterbacks in here that are proven, but what do you expect this year with some change? You'll kind of get what I mean here when we get to the next guy. And there's also some other guys like Austin Simmons, Gunnar Stockton. It's it's a very hard group to rank based upon potential right now. And that's why I think, even though I don't know that we can take a ton from the spring, but if Simpson clearly claims the job, looks good, we're hearing good things, I think you've got to move him up the list. I think there's definite wild card upside potential for sure.
Okay, so who is number 12 on the list?
A late flip, because I had these reversed earlier in the day. I'm going to go with Jackson Arnold over at Auburn. So, you know, I hate to repeat myself, Mike, but it does feel like there's some upside here. It's sort of like, which one do you believe? And two things can be true. He's got to play better than he did at Oklahoma, but there's also a lot of talent and there's also a lot of upside in this offense with the supporting cast. His receivers, one of the best groups in the country, think they should have a solid offensive line. So all of that stuff and injuries and scheme that was going on at Oklahoma, that's out the window this season. So the question is, can he reach his potential at Auburn? And I think there are reasons to be optimistic, but of course, yeah, also wild card. Last year's production was very much up and down. How much of that was Oklahoma? How much growth does Arnold have to do? Those are questions that I'm wrestling with as we sit here in February.
Yeah. And I just don't know how to grade him. I mean, some people we talk about, he was really good against Alabama. You know, maybe he started to figure it out a little bit and not as good the next week. But and then at times, it's almost like they took him off the field too late. You know what I mean? Like they should have probably removed him earlier from like Tennessee game. So I don't know, man. It's so baffling to me. Everybody knows my thoughts on Hugh Freeze, but it's baffling to me that the man who could lose his job because the quarterbacks turned the ball over too much landed a quarterback that turns the ball over as much as Jackson. I mean, this is playing with fire. It's like, it's almost like he's got a stick of dynamite and it could blow up in his hands, or he could throw it, you know, at his target there and blow it to smithereens, because this all could work. Or it could blow up in his face. I don't know that it's anywhere in between. It's one or the other.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, if this hits, I mean, Auburn should be a top 25 team. If it doesn't hit, Auburn's probably got a new coach in 2026. I don't necessarily believe like a lot of the coach speak. You know, Hugh Freeze said at the Senior Bowl, I believe that Jackson Arnold's pretty much like a perfect fit for his offense. I mean, I would hope we recruited him. So I would hope he fits his offense well. But I think there's a lot of optimism from Hugh Freeze that this is going to work out. The question for me is, like, which one do you believe? How much of it was Oklahoma? How much of it was the supporting cast? We saw in the Alamo Bowl, when they played Arizona, a little bit too turnover prone in that game, but over 300 passing yards. And there were moments there you saw it. You were like, oh, yeah, like that's why he was one of the top quarterback recruits in that class. So I could almost make a case that he's the biggest wild card. There's one other guy in this list I think that might top my quarterback wild card list, but Jackson Arnold would be up there.
Okay, so who's number 11?
This is tough, Mike. I think this guy's going to be a top 25 quarterback this year or so, but only one start. We're going to go with Gunnar Stockton at 11. I love the potential upside. I think the receivers, fingers crossed if you're a Georgia fan, will be better this year. I would like to see a little bit more balance out of Georgia. You know, they got to get back to running the ball. They've got some pieces, some new pieces on the offensive line. But what I saw in the Sugar Bowl against Notre Dame was a quarterback that was not necessarily intimidated by the moment. That's what I like to see. Like, when you're thrown into the fire right away, how do you perform? And I thought Stockton handled that moment well. A lot of upside here, but also very unproven at this point. So he kind of goes almost in the middle of the quarterbacks. I think you could slot a lot of these quarterbacks we're going to talk about, 7 through 13, in a different order, and you probably wouldn't get a lot of disagreement from me.
Yeah. Well, you do know Mike Bobo is the offensive coordinator, right?
Yeah, honestly, are you surprised that there hasn't been like any like staff changes at Georgia this offseason?
Well, Yeah, I mean, especially after one of their, veteran Georgia radio personalities and former quarterbacks said, coach is retiring or what have you, and now he's not. I mean, that was pretty wild, but I don't know. Kirby's not necessarily a knee-jerk coach, and I don't necessarily think that I think the running game was a real issue, obviously. I think Carson Beck was not who he was cracked up to be. So, I don't know. I think they're kind of putting it more on that than they are the coaching, but the coaches are responsible. So, yeah, to answer your question, I am a little bit surprised. But, I don't think Mike Bobo is necessarily the problem. I really don't.
I would agree with that. I also think Todd Monken was just more creative. Like, his ability to get the most out of the offense, creativity, he seems like he was on a different level than Mike Bobo. And I think Bobo gets a lot of criticism, and sometimes I don't know if it's necessarily been fair.
Right.
But I think Monken is just better. So it's hard to compare. Like, Monken might've been the best play caller from an OC standpoint in college football, and you downgraded slightly. So do you have a problem with Stockton at 11? Do you think that's too low or too high?
I mean, I've been high on him for a while. I was a little underwhelmed with what he did against Notre Dame. Again, Notre Dame, turns out they had a really good defense, and Georgia's offensive line, again, that was kind of they were an issue. And yeah, you can't necessarily put that all you can't put much of any of that, I don't think, on the quarterback. So I think this is one that could come back to bite you. I think he'll be better than number 11, but I'm right there with you with your logic and rationale for why you did it, but you're still wrong. It's fun being this guy. I'd put him higher. This all of them. I'd put them all higher, but especially Gunnar Stockton.
I love the fact that it's February the 3rd and we're already like taking the rage meter to 100. This is for 2025.
So. All right. So now we're into the top 10. Who do you got number 10?
This is my breakout quarterback for this season. And I think there's a good chance that he will work his way up the list by the time we get through spring practice and we see how all the new pieces fit. I got Austin Simmons. I think he is due for a breakout year at Ole Miss. Number one, it's Lane Kiffin scheme. Track record, the receivers they brought in through the portal, I think they will restock there. I mentioned it earlier, but offensive line, how that group progresses is going to be crucial. Not a ton of tape on him, but I think what we saw against Georgia, it's a very small sample size. That one drive was really, really good. And so I think when you take into account not being overwhelmed by the moment, the talent, the upside, the system, I've got him at 10. But I think he's a top, 20 type quarterback to start the season, and is due for a breakout year.
Right, and if we're gonna, I don't know if "dock's" the right word, but if we're gonna dock guys like Pribula for not having enough game action, we can't then on the other side say, well, Austin Simmons, every Ole Miss fan's fired up about him. Lane Kiffin's fired up about him. Let's put him number 3. You know what I mean? Like, you can't do that with these guys. So I get it. I think Austin Simmons could be awesome, but I've also seen it many times, Steven, as have you, and as have people that are willing to take their blinders off, that there's been many quarterbacks we're excited about. We saw him for a series. Remember that series? Just saw Georgia. Oh, you just referenced Georgia. He looked like $1 million. Now, what if he comes out here and says, Kentucky, he lays a complete egg. I don't think this is going to happen, but let's say they lose to Kentucky, then we'll be like, God, this guy can't play a lick. You know what I mean? Whereas the truth is probably somewhere in between. So it's very easy to knock guys that we've seen, and the guys we haven't seen, they're just the greatest things to slice bread. So Austin Simmons, you're currently in that category. You have earned it based on your play in limited reps, but it's very hard to just skyrocket him up the list until they actually play meaningful action other than a series against Georgia.
Also, it's hard to run back the exact same success you had in one year from the next. And it's, I mentioned, I trust the scheme. I trust Lane Kiffin, but there's a revamped offensive line. They're losing some of their best receivers. I think they're going to be fine, but I think it may be a slower build next season. And I think that's kind of why I have him a little bit lower just based upon the unknowns. But I think if you ask me like my breakout, most guys I think are going to be stars. I think in time, by the end of next season, I think Austin Simmons will be at the top of that list.
They said you whiffed on that one.
I don't know what you did there.
Yeah. All right, who's number nine, Steven?
Mike, this is I hate to repeat myself here, but this is tough. You know, I wrestled with these next three quarterbacks, and I actually changed them up one or two times. I got Marcel Reed at nine. And again, I think he's a top 20 quarterback. I think to kind of something we talked about with Gunnar Stockton is my first real impression of Marcel Reed was that Texas Bowl against Oklahoma State. He played a couple snaps before that game, but with the injury to Jalen Henderson, he was thrown in there, plays well, comes back the next year, goes into the game against Florida in the Swamp, does enough for Texas A&M to win. A lot of back and forth between he and Wigman, new offense, some, you know, they didn't have the right receivers, and he held up really well. And I think coming into 2025, there's a lot of reasons to think that he will turn a corner. It's the transfers at receiver. It's another offseason to work under Colin Klein. And also, if you kind of look at the season at the end of the year, the comeback against Auburn to get that game to overtime, some of the mistakes in the Las Vegas Bowl, not his fault. I think you saw growth, and I think I would expect to see this this offense and Marcel Reed take a step forward next year. So a lot of upside here, but also, again, some questions as we look ahead to 2025.
Mm. I any concern, though, that, again, early in the season, I don't know how much of a true competition it was, but didn't play against Notre Dame, of course. I thought really good against Florida, up and down against Arkansas, and then they took him out for the Missouri game. That was our best game on offense at A&M. And then, of course, we brought him back in for LSU, and he let them lit the world on fire, essentially. So just kind of the back and forth. Is that concern you at all with Marcel Reed?
I think so. I would also kind of make the argument that it is concerning, but also I would expect that as a quarterback in his first full season of snaps, and also in an offense where their receivers weren't necessarily maybe the greatest at getting open. You know, they just didn't have a lot of difference makers last season. So I think, and this kind of gets at the question, like, how do you rank him? Because I think there's the potential meter is probably high here. Mm-hmm. But based on what he's done, I think number nine is pretty fair in the conference because he is ahead of some guys. Blake Chapin in his career, Zach Calzada in his career, much more proven. But there's a lot of upside to Marcel Reed's game. And I think that's with Colin Klein and these transfer receivers, I think they're due for a step forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he better because expectations are getting ratcheted up there a little bit in A&M, and they won't be able to do it unless Marcel Reed takes that next step forward. All right, who you got, number eight?
I'm going Talen Green.
Ooh.
From Arkansas. This 7-8-9 trio is very difficult to sort out. So Talen Green, I think maybe the biggest reason to be optimistic about Arkansas is Talen Green, second year, Bobby Petrino. Revamped offensive line, revamped receiving core, they are a reason to be concerned. But I think Green in his development in this offense should have Arkansas optimistic that their offense can take a step forward, and they got a chance to exceed on that 7-win mark of this season. If you wanted to kind of pick apart some things, you know, 5 of his 8 touchdown passes in SEC play came against Mississippi State. So we'd like to see maybe a little bit more consistency within the conference.
Mm. Yeah, he's another one. Massive ceiling. I think I'm going to repeat myself. I don't even mind doing it. I'd put him higher. I'd be the Cousin Shane of this show, putting him way higher. Talen Green. But yeah, I mean, that's fair. Inconsistent. You know, he'll make a couple wow plays that'll just blow your mind. If they can get that Talen Green all year long, he may win the Heisman. I mean, I think he's got that kind of ceiling. But then you watch, you know, 2 or 3 games, and there's a lot of boneheaded plays in there too. and a lot of mistakes, a lot of turnovers that shouldn't be there. So I think you missed this one, but I see why you did it. You know what I mean? Because it's a lot of, we're banking on potential. We're banking on year two. But I don't know. I mean, his best receiver's now gone. His best couple of receivers now gone. Best running back gone. I mean, this is, it's not going to be easy, I don't think, for Taylen Green.
I think the question on the personnel losses for me is always overcome by enormous talent for Taylen Green and sort of the ultimate like equalizer to some extent. Like, I think if you have a quarterback like that, and I think this is true for South Carolina, if you're not as talented as the Alabamas and the Georgias of the world, and you've got a quarterback who can make plays with his legs, he can create the dynamic 2 to 3 plays that sort of level the playing field every week, it gives you a chance to sort of overcome some of those things. And I do think the second year under Petrino, I think, is usually pretty beneficial to quarterbacks. So I could talk myself into him a little bit higher. I could also talk myself into him being lower, because I think it's not crazy that Simmons, Stockton, and Marcel Reed, Ty Simpson, or any of those guys are better than him this season.
Right. Well, I have enjoyed the comments, Steve, because they are ripping you to shreds, as they should, for this list. But you know who they shouldn't rip, Steven? That's our good friends over at Public Rec. Come on, check them out. PublicRec.com. Put in that promo code SEC for 20% off your full order. Steven, I ought to send you some Public Rec. You'll thank me the rest of your life, because they have outstanding, this is clothwear. It's very comfortable. It's fit to size. So you just tell them what size you are. You can give them the width and length you need of pants, shirts, things of that nature, and they'll hook you up over at Public Rec. I liked it so much, Steven, because they sent me some free product. I liked it so much, I used that promo code SEC to get 20% off and ordered for myself. So I spent my own hard-earned money to order some Public Rec. I liked it that much. You will not be disappointed. Really nice pants and shirts they got. While it's still relatively cold out, Steven, it's nice to wear long sleeve shirts and pants. And if you ain't doing Public Rec, you ain't doing it right. So again, publicrec.com. Promo code SEC for 20% off. And yes, as Monkey says, not to be mixed with Joy Mode. We got that back too, so I might as well knock it out. Monkey, I appreciate you, brother. Try joymode.com. Promo code SEC. Get you 20% off your first order, or 30% off if you do a subscription service with tryjoymode.com with that promo code SEC. I keep seeing it in the comments. Steven, where is Shane? Why ain't Shane here? Shane is on his own little joy mode down in Orlando, if you know what I mean. He took I think the pack comes, it's like a 24 pack, whatever. I cannot imagine the madness going down in Orlando with cousin Shane and his wife, because all you got to do is mix a single pack of joy mode with a glass of water, 45 minutes, you'll be ready to party, Steven. All natural supplement designed to enhance blood flow. Join the over 200,000 men who trust Joy Mode like cousin Shane. So try joymode.com. Promo code SEC, 20% off. Steven, I know you are in joy mode with this list. So let's get back to lucky number 7. Who's the number 7 quarterback in the SEC?
I was going to say our good friends over at Public Rec. I'm a public wreck because everybody. So, our good friends over there make outstanding clothing, by the way. I've been eyeing several things on their site. On number 7, I will tell you, this was the hardest quarterback for me to rank, and that is John Mateer of Oklahoma. One season at Washington State as the starter, incredibly prolific. Washington State's offense was great against some suspect defenses. When they played Washington, 50% completion rate. When they played Texas Tech, 47% completion rate. And Texas Tech, not a good defense. So it's kind of, he's probably the biggest wild card of these quarterbacks. How does he make that transition from playing a Mountain West schedule to the SEC? Without putting that aside, though, dynamic. I think he's got some room to improve as a passer, but going in the same system with a talented, transfer group that Oklahoma has at receiver, Deion Burks, you could see this hitting right away. You could also see this as it's a pretty big jump to go from the Mountain West, essentially, to the SEC.
Could this be this year's Bill Beambo here? Where I'm kidding. But, yeah, I do like, again, we shout out to Steven. He's the one that hooked us up. Returning offensive line snaps, he hooked it up with the offensive line number. So Oklahoma is 71% returning snaps on the offensive line. This is fourth highest in the SEC. So you got to believe the offensive line will be better, which will be huge for this offense potentially. After last year, they were, I think, 15th in this statistic, and we all know what happened there. So, yeah, I hear you, Steven. I like John Mateer. I need to do my full breakdown on him. I'm probably going to do that pretty soon. But, I don't know. This is another tough one. But I certainly, is it fair to say you'd rather have John Mateer than Jackson Arnold? Or based on your rankings, I think you would.
Yeah, I think I would. I think at this point, if you'd asked me before last season, the answer would have been different. And I still think that I think Arnold can still be a good quarterback in the SEC. I just think at this point, if you're Oklahoma to get a guy who was that prolific and he knows the offense already, he is day one ready to step into your starting job, I think you have to go with that. So maybe the most intriguing, also maybe the quarterback with maybe some of the most pressure in the country to turn this around. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. Which it shouldn't be all on him.
Yeah.
Cause Oklahoma was so bad on offense last year, but let me ask you this, because could this not the start, but a continuation, perhaps of a trend like, it's probably not a perfect example, but Indiana, again, that's probably not even the best example, but we have seen it before, Stephen, where someone who hires an offensive coordinator and the quarterback kind of follows. Does that give you confidence that this could work at Oklahoma, given that Arbuckle and Mateer worked together last couple of years?
Absolutely. I think that, gives me a lot of reasons for hope if you're Oklahoma, because I think if it was quarterback and OC and they were coming from different worlds trying to mesh, I think it would be a lot to ask, especially with Venables in a make or break year. But you have a guy who knows the system. He can help not only like supercharge your improvement, but also he knows the system so well that he can be teaching this to other guys in the workouts. Like, he's already ready to lead this offense. So that to me is the best case scenario for a team like Oklahoma. When you have this amount of questions on offense, you're basically importing the offense, the coordinator, and the quarterback all ready to go from the jump.
Mm-hmm. And they're calling him Meteor in the comments here, Steven. So I think you got Meteor's ranking wrong. I'm sorry, Chicken, but Chicken seems, I think he's had some cornbread tonight. All right, who's number six on your list here, Steven?
I've got Nico at six. Ooh. These next two, they're related on where location is, but so for Nico, I think high expectations coming in to 2024. The $8 million man.
Yeah.
I kind of expected him to have a little bit better season. He was tied for seventh in the SEC in quarterback rating. Solid. But I thought maybe there was a little bit more that we would see out of him. I also thought he played better at the end of the season. Certainly wasn't his fault that they lost to Ohio State. You could also look and say a lot of production came against UTEP, Vanderbilt, and Mississippi State. So there's some good and bad. I think you would like to see more consistency going forward, a little bit better connection on some of those big plays. And I think most importantly, it is now Nico's team. There is, with all the losses that Tennessee has, with Dylan Sampson gone to the NFL, this offense is now in his hands. So he has got to take a step forward in 2025.
Yeah. And, going back to what I said about Austin Simmons, this is maybe a perfect example. 2023 starts the bowl game, wins the MVP. This guy's the greatest thing since sliced bread, but didn't play a ton that other than that. So, you get overhyped on a small sample size. And now that we've had 13 games to watch him play, people say, oh, God, he can't even play. He just led a team to college football playoff. He's trash. You know, I mean, only 12 quarterbacks did it, but he, you know, has he ever played football? Yeah, he was only 19, but his, you know, his career is behind him, Steven. I mean, they're already, they signed number one recruit in 2026. They're looking to replace Nico because he can't play. But, you know, the truth is somewhere in between. And if he continues to progress, but it's going to be difficult because, again, we shouldn't cite these for everything, like the end-all be-all, but Tennessee is number 14 in offensive line snaps returning. I haven't done running back or receivers just yet, but I'm going to wager that Tennessee is very low on the list of returning production there. So will the players around Nico step up? They better too, because if not, people are going to be eating you alive, Steven, for how high you have Nico if the rest of the team does not do their part. But yeah, considering he's only 20, or I think he's only like 19 right now, but he's about to turn 20. I think Nico's just scratched the surface of what he can be as a quarterback. Do you think that's fair?
I think that is definitely fair. I think it is something that we should probably keep in mind is that quarterbacks and players can get better from year one to year two. Right. And the fact that Nico threw what, like 19 touchdowns, five picks, led a team to the college football playoff. And yes, he's got to do more. But for a guy that has had super high expectations to be, I think fair to say he was effective in year one. Maybe I expected a little bit more. Maybe the expectations were just too high. But I think that's a pretty good way to start your career. And I think there's a lot of upside. And maybe now with more on his plate as having to be the guy, maybe we'll see him take that step forward in 2025.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And they wouldn't have beat Alabama without him. They wouldn't have beat Oklahoma, which maybe by the end of the year, that wasn't that great of a win. But at the time, that was a hell of a win. So, you know, he has stepped up in big time moments, no doubt. Okay, now we're into the top five. This is when people are really going to get mad at you, Steven. We haven't even got to Arch. How the hell we got Arch this? I'll never know. But it's your list, Steven. Just go ahead. Anoint Arch. He's probably number one. Who's number five?
We're going to go with the governor of Alabama, Diego Pavia. not only from the statistical impact that he made at Vanderbilt, being able to execute Tim Beck's offense, and certainly all the production that he did in those upsets, the Alabama game, the near miss against Texas. The production was there, offensive improvement, but also it's the off-field sort of impact that he had at Vanderbilt. Like, there is a totally different culture shift once Diego Pavia got on that team. There was a belief, and it translated into that big win against Alabama. So it's not only the statistical on-field impact, it's the entire culture shift and change that Pavia has brought to Nashville.
Yeah, you may even have him too low.
Yeah.
Now, we're not doing NFL draft. We're not doing fantasy stats. He's not going to be a prolific stats guy because that Vanderbilt would be foolish if they tried to outscore everybody. You know, they're essentially playing Naval Academy type football.
Yeah.
In the SEC, and it won them some games last year. So it's about execution. It's about chewing up the clock. And they have, you know, just an ultimate competitor back there. He's, you know, I always thought it was so silly, but I'm going to do it myself, Steven. He's almost like not even a quarterback. He's like a linebacker playing quarterback back there. You know what I mean? So he's got that mentality. He's going to deliver the blows. He's not going to take blows. He's going to deliver them. And yeah, I love this guy. I can't say enough nice things about Diego Pavia, and the fact you got Arch over him is just shameful.
I thought at first, when we were in the season, that teams may have caught up to Vanderbilt's offense a little bit, and they may have, like, by the end of the year. But also think that his injuries late in the season slowed this team too, and you saw in the bowl game against Georgia Tech, like, what a healthy having that time off and what a difference it can make. So keeping him healthy is got to be priority number one next year for Vanderbilt, because their season will rise and fall with Pavia. Because to your point, you know, he is like a point guard in this offense, like directing sort of like a triple option style attack. It's sort of like an offshoot essentially of some of these spread attacks. Like, it's an iteration of it. So what he brings to the table for this Vanderbilt offense is so important, but also being sort of like the leader of this program too. It's like something you can't put into a stat. It's just something that you see each week when there's a belief that Vanderbilt can win, and that translated this year.
Yeah, and I'm glad you said that about the bowl game. I didn't think of it quite like that, but it made me think of, I throw up the schedule here, you know, they lost to Tennessee 36-23, so that's all people remember. And they were, that wasn't even that competitive, you know? But that's not the reality of how that game played out. Vanderbilt jumped on Tennessee, if you recall, and there was a meltdown. Oh, my God, Tennessee's going to blow it with the playoffs on the line. I mean, the guy's a leader. The guy's, he got that team so fired up, I believe, and had them believing they could beat Tennessee. Now, the problem is Diego Pavia doesn't play defense. And once Tennessee started the ball rolling downhill, so to speak, they were just gashing Vanderbilt with explosive play after explosive play, and they never stood a chance in the second half of that football game. But, yeah, I mean, that just goes to further your point that, you know, he's a big-game player, and he is kind of the one that has made Vanderbilt relevant, quite frankly.
100%. It's almost hard to put into words, like a statistical or like a, it's not even an advanced stat, the impact that he had. I mean, you can look at the offensive stats and you can see he improved, and, you know, he had 20 touchdowns and 4 picks, and his rushing yards was great too, but it's almost the intangibles that we can't put into words that also factor into this too. It's like stats don't necessarily tell you the whole picture about any quarterback's production. But that X factor that he brought to this team, I thought was pretty valuable. And that's why I have him at 5. And once we get to the top 4, maybe we could have him a spot or two higher too.
Yeah. And shout out Cousin Lou. He says, Cousin Shane just threw his phone, 'cause you got Diego over Nico. And then geez, Luis says, Shane certainly isn't in joy mode anymore. Thanks to you, Steven. And then Cousin David says, Cousin Shane is in joy mode. He's not even thinking about his phone. So the little conversations in the comments are killing me. All right, number 4. Who's number 4, Steven?
Going DJ Lagway at 4. All of these quarterbacks, I think, and some of the ones we mentioned with Austin Simmons and Gunnar Stockton, there's some upside here with DJ Lagway. I think you saw the physical talent. I think the question for me is, does the rest of that catch up this year in terms of production? And what I mean by that is, 9 interceptions, would like to see that number be a little bit lower, a little bit more consistency overall. That probably comes from just getting more snaps. But you saw the talent, you saw the big playability, and also not necessarily like Pavia, but I do think there is a kind of an it factor with DJ Lagway too that also weighs into this.
Yeah, and this is another one. I mean, you may not be high enough. I go back and forth. We haven't got to Sellers yet, but I go back and forth between Lagway and Sellers and where they should rank on lists like this. And really just depends on the day, depends on the time. Right. I may give you a different answer here, but I think DJ Lagway, he could be a legend by the time he's done at Florida. Certainly if Billy Napier gets it rolling and they start winning at a high level, I think DJ Lagway is going to get the credit for being the spark that kind of turned that thing around.
I agree. Yeah, I think that is. I mean, at that point of Billy Napier's 2024, where we weren't really sure if he was going to make it, and there was that they put out the statement, of course, that he would continue as the head coach. But I think one of the biggest reasons to believe was that they had a franchise quarterback in DJ Lagway that not only wanted to be at Florida, but wanted Billy Napier to be his head coach. So I think he's going to be a driving force in saving Billy Napier's job if it works out that way. And, you know, like I said, you watch him and you just see the physical talent, you see the arm talent, you see everything to like. I think the question is, like, how fast does it come together for him? And I think it'll probably come together pretty fast this year. And I think there's a case that number 4 might be too low for him.
Mm. I think you're right there. All right. Who's number 3?
I got Lenora Sellers, Mike. I wrestled with these top 4. I could move Sellers to the top. I could have him 4. I just probably one of the most improved players in the SEC last season from week one to the end of the season. Love the clutch performances against Clemson, A&M, Missouri, can be a real difference maker. And he had that breakout season last year. And now I think you're looking at one of the top 10 candidates to win the Heisman, potentially a preseason All-American, certainly in the mix to be All-SEC. So I think everything that you wanted to see during the season, difference making, improvement, all that stuff, it was there. And now for me, I think what intrigues me the most is what's the next step for Lenora Sellers, because I think the upside's still pretty significant.
Yeah, and I think it, correct me if I'm wrong, I could be, but he's probably the biggest running threat at the quarterback position in the SEC this season. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I would agree with that.
Yeah, so I mean, that would also be factored in. Now, obviously, he's got to get a little bit better as a passer, but that's not to say that he's not already there, an elite different maker with his passing. So, so it's pretty wild that you got Sellers and Lagway 3 and 4. I would switch that up. I got them 1 and 2. I really do. So I can't wait to hear what you got to say about number 2, because this is going to be wrong.
I wrestled with flipping those two, Sellers and Lagway. And the funny thing was, I was afraid I was going to be too low on Sellers. And I thought maybe I considered him at 1, and I thought, well, maybe I'm too high on him. And he's certainly more proven at this point than Lagway, just in terms of total production. So I think, you know, this, Mike, this gets at kind of the point you and I were making. I think there are probably 4 quarterbacks that have a case to be on the All-America team. You know, these top 4 that we'll talk about. And I think, you know, 13 of these guys could be in the top 30. I mean, this is a really, really good year for quarterbacks. If DJ Lagway is your 4th best quarterback in the SEC, that's a pretty darn good year for quarterbacks in the SEC.
Right. Oh, shout out. Hey, Cousin Rick, long time no see. Hope you're well, my friend. He's missed the show. Been under the weather. Looking forward to 2025. Gig him. Cousin Rick, thank you so much. Hopefully you feel better, brother. We love seeing you on the channel, so I hope you're feeling better. Do not look at where Steven's got Marcel Reed, because he's dead wrong, as always. But and he may want to tune out because where you gonna put Arch Manning? Can we go higher than number 1? Is it number, you got him number 0, Steven?
I maybe he's not even ranked at 1. He's just like beyond whatever he could get.
So long of the Heisman Trophy. It's right. It's the Arch Award we're giving out to everybody.
Just gonna go ahead and give him NFL MVP, Super Bowl honors. He's not funny. Is there, before we get to the top 2, which quarterback do you think I was the lowest on, or like where was the quarterback that I misplaced the most so far?
Probably. I mean, you got a lot of misses here. I'm looking at all of them, but no, I'm kidding. But maybe, buddy, I want to say Jackson Arnold, because I don't even, but I don't necessarily disagree. Like, I think Arnold could be the 16th best quarterback in this conference based on some of what I've seen. I think with the weapons he has at Auburn, as long as Hugh Freeze doesn't screw it up, I think he could be a top 5 quarterback. So that's probably one. I think Gunnar Stockton, I would probably bump him up a little bit. And then I love Talen Green. So I would say those 3 kind of stand out. And obviously DJ Lagway and Lenore Sellers, I'd put them 1 and 2. But yeah, so I only hate about 9 of your 16 selections.
I guess is there anybody? But judging by that, who's the quarterback that I am the highest on that I should be lower on?
Is it Arch Manning?
Arch Manning.
I'm not ready to get now. He can certainly be that. I saw he's already sponsored by Red Bull and getting interviewed by Marty Smith. I think some of it, Steven, and this isn't fair to Arch. Not that he had to do those interviews, and I'm sure he got paid. But I think people are like already getting tired of it. You know what I mean? Like, we're in February and he's getting SportsCenter breakdowns. You know what I mean? That's like, what are we doing here? Let's let's let them earn that. You know, I feel like Lagway's earned that. I feel like Sellers has earned that. But you don't see Marty Smith interviewing Little Red Sellers right now down in Columbia, do you?
That's a good point. Sellers is probably not getting enough attention from the national media, the season that he had and what he could do in 2025. Am I seeing this right, that Arch Manning is already the Heisman front runner for 2025 as well?
No, not according to FanDuel. He's okay. Second best odds. So number one is another guy we've yet to mention. Garrett Nussmeier currently has the best odds to win the Heisman according to FanDuel.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I can see it, obviously, because I have them both very high, one and two in my quarterback rankings. Should I get into it and we can talk through this together?
Yeah, well, I'm going to need some therapy after this. Better help or something. Yeah.
All right, at number two, Garrett Nussmeier.
Oh, my God. That's even worse now that I know who's number one.
Yeah. So let's talk about the good for Garrett Nussmeier. Year one, it was pretty good. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the question now is LSU's rebuilding on the offensive line. Got some new faces at receiver. Would like to see the interceptions be a little bit lower. You know, he threw 12, but also think that's part of the gunslinger mentality, too. I think he'll throw some, but it'll also get you a couple touchdowns that way, too. So the physical talent is there. Keeping him at LSU instead of going to the NFL was a big time win for this team, because I think LSU can be a playoff team next year. So I've got Garrett Nussmeier at two, and I know Mike is very happy about that.
Yeah, I just feel that I believe I've said this before, but I think having Garrett Nussmeier is going to give LSU a massive advantage every Saturday in the fall, because he's kind of he's one of these like coaches on the field. You know what I mean? Like he's an offensive coordinator. He's been I know he just started the 1 year, but he's been at LSU forever. And this is another one of guys that you know, didn't win the starting job right away. That many schools, including Florida, was after him. I believe Auburn's another one. Many, many teams were very interested in Garrett Nussmeier, and I was glad that when he finally got his opportunity, he, for the most part, was just outstanding. And that was even with, I thought the interior of their offensive line was a real issue. So it's kind of hard to knock him for anything, but you know, we just talked about Sellers, what a weapon he is in the running game. That doesn't mean that Nussmeier is like a complete statue, but it's night and day different on what they can do on the ground. So, and I would even throw DJ Lagway in there. I think Lagway is a much better runner than Garrett Nussmeier myself. So I think, you know, you're almost playing 11 on 10 when you got Garrett Nussmeier. Meanwhile, you cannot do that against Lagway and Sellers. So I think that is something that I would slightly knock Nussmeier for, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And I think on his career, it's pretty rare now to see a quarterback sit behind somebody like Jaden Daniels, stay, and then come back for his senior year when he could have been, the first-round quarterback. I mean, he could be the first quarterback off the board, I think, if he came out, considering the two that are in the mix. But also, I think you made a point about his leadership, and LSU is going to have some new faces on the offense. It's receivers and offensive line, and the first game of the year is going to be against Clemson. And then you get Ole Miss, and you still have to play Florida in the month of September. So there's three games, and throw South Carolina in there before the midway point of the season. There's, you know, three or four games right there that could make or break LSU season right out of the gate. So the fact that you have a guy with that kind of production, leadership ability, that's one of the reasons why I think LSU could be one of those teams that goes from out of the playoff to in the playoff next year, is they've got one of the best quarterbacks in the country.
Yeah, and another thing of praise you could say is clearly the guy can take to coaching. Brian Kelly's screaming his head off on the sideline. Yeah. Yeah. And with his dad, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like that, and that should not be taken for granted in today's day and age, because a lot of these guys, you know, I don't sit here and call them out, because it just kind of is what it is. But a lot of these guys can't take coaching. And I think Nussmeier clearly can do that. So I think that's another positive in that regard. But I think he'll have a monster year. I really do. I think Nussmeier, as long as LSU does what they're capable of doing, he may very well win the Heisman Trophy. And maybe that's, he does have the best odds right now to win it all. So I've called that out. I wouldn't have it there, but I understand why it's there.
Would like to see LSU develop a little bit more consistent of a running game around him, like traditional running back, get in, you know, whatever sets you want and try and run the ball, because they do need to take a little bit of pressure off of him this season. You don't have that threat of Jaden Daniels in his legs. And like you mentioned, Lenora Sellers, DJ Lagway bring a little different dimension. So that kind of be like the next thing for LSU is, you know, when you think about the team for 2025, you would assume the defense gets better under Blake Baker. You've got a potential first round pick at quarterback, and now you just need to kind of develop some of the things around him, whether it's run game, rebuild offensive line, receiving core. There's a lot to like about Garrett Nussmeier, and I can see why he's the Heisman front runner by those odds.
Yeah. All right. So let's get it over with. I'm glad it looks like your internet's cut. Maybe it'll get cut out and we'll just finish this show. And I'll be damn glad, because you got some shenanigans. I never accuse you of clickbait, Steven. This is clickbait Stevens back at it here.
I got Arch Manning at one, Mike. I know I'm going to take some heat for this. I did sneak a peek.
He really did a good. He did a number on ULM. I'll give you that. What a performance!
That long touchdown run. It was a great, unbelievable touchdown run. There was the performance against Mississippi State. There was the touchdown run against Texas. I was just so overwhelmed by those small bits. But no, in all seriousness, I think you just have to kind of look at this as, if we're guessing who is going to have the best season and we're banking on potential and upside, I got to go with Arch Manning. And I trust Sark. I trust Kyle Flood to figure out the offensive line. Wingo, I think, is going to be a star catching passes from Arch Manning. I just think that he can take this offense to another level. Is he the top quarterback in the SEC right now? If you were just doing it based upon what we know, probably not. But I think you have to bank on his upside and his potential and the skill set. And that's why I think he will end up as the first quarterback in the SEC power rankings at the end of 2025.
Well, I'm glad you have to do that, because I don't have to do that. I get the logic. Yeah, he'll probably be amazing. He'll probably be an upgrade over Quinn. What is it? Any concern at all, though, that, you know, because it seems like some of these Texas fans are ready to kick Quinn Ewers to the curb here. What if he's a downgrade? And I'm not saying like significant downgrade or anything, but what if he is just a hair not as good as Quinn Ewers? I mean, is there any concern of that at all for you?
I think there's got to be, like, not long term, but short term, because especially when your season opener is against Ohio State at Ohio State. And in the SEC, I mean, it's a very, you know, even though the slate this year was pretty favorable for Texas, I mean, it's still the SEC and it's pretty unforgiving as far as opponents. And so if the development window is a little bit larger than we think, and this goes, you know, we talked about Nico and his development, like maybe it takes a little bit longer than we think. There's a ton of pressure. I think that's the other thing. It's like, there is a ton of pressure on his shoulders and he's handled it well so far. It's going to go to another level this offseason. Once we get more closer to media days, predictions come out. Texas is one of the front runners to win the national title. So it's already at like level 10. It's going to go to level 100 in a matter of months.
Do you think, let's see if we can get you for a bold prediction here. Will Arch Manning be at SEC media days, or will they keep him away, do you think?
I think he will. I think you have to, don't you?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, they should. The SEC may mandate it. You know what I mean? Yeah. I don't think they're allowed to do that, but they may have to on that one.
Yeah, I would like to see what Anthony Hill, Colin Simmons, and Arch Manning, like, that's a pretty strong trio for Texas, like in terms of just talent and you know, interview potential.
Sark will probably troll us all, bring the punter, kicker, and backup quarterback or something, you know?
Bring DJ Campbell because he's the only returning offensive line starter. Yeah.
Oh, buddy. All right. So let me recap real quick. Anybody that missed it, I mean, I can't believe it. I'm offended. I don't know if you'll ever be back on this program, Steven. Steve is list, not my list. Arch Manning 1, Garrett Nussmeier 2, Lenore Sellers 3, DJ Lagway 4, Diego Pavia 5, Nico 6, John Mateer 7, Taylen Green 8, Marcel Reed 9, Austin Simmons 10, Gunnar Stockton 11, Jackson Arnold 12, Ty Simpson 13, Blake Shapen 14, Bo Prabula 15, and Zach Calzada number 16. What a list here, Steven. I can't wait to put this graphic together.
Oh, I imagine the rage meter is already very high. It's going to get higher. Where would you rank Archmania out of curiosity in your early rankings?
Maybe like 6 or 7. Okay. I don't know. I haven't seen it, Steven. I haven't seen it in a big time. I know he run that touchdown, which they had to review to make sure it was a touchdown against A&M. But I don't know. I don't reward people for beating ULM.
You know, I make sure I give proper credit here, but ESPN posted a early like All America team for next season. I think Chris Lowe put it together.
Uh-huh.
And Arch Manning was second team preseason All American behind Cade Klubnik at Clemson. Mm.
He must be a fan of Dabo or something. I don't know. Yeah. No, so, that makes sense. So you're not an island. Certainly. There's gonna be plenty of Arch love. And he probably is that guy. But again, I mean, even using your own logic, you know, like Austin Simmons, why we got him so low? Because of small sample size. Arch Manning, small sample size. You know what I mean? Like I tend to favor the guys that I know are game breakers. And when I think right now, who do I want with the ball in their hand to score me a touchdown with the game on the line? The three guys, Nussmeier, Sellers, and Lagway, those are the guys that I would trust more than any other in the SEC as of this moment. Now, that could change in a heartbeat, but yeah, I think those guys have got to be three. So I would say at worst, Arch Manning 4. But I wouldn't even give him that. He's got to earn it, you know?
If, would Arch top your list of, like, most, like, breakout? I mean, I guess Austin Simmons is up there, too, but, like, breakout upside. I guess, like, is that fair to say, like, in your mind, he tops that list?
Right, yeah. Number one, could skyrocket, could be a star. It would probably be him. You mentioned Austin Simmons, Taylen Green, and yeah, that's those are probably my top three. Maybe that would be the top three for me, and with Jackson Arnold just on the outside there.
I'm glad you brought up Quinn Ewers a few minutes ago, and I wanted to get your opinion on this one. I think Quinn Ewers is probably going to end up being one of the better quarterbacks that Texas has had in some time. I mean, certainly Vince Young, Colt McCoy, we can run through the history. But I think he helped to like raise the floor there at Texas. And I think my thinking on Arch is that he can take Texas from like here to here. Like his upside will be a little bit better. Maybe he'll be a little bit more consistent in some of the deep balls and some of the other passing aspects. But Ewers, I think maybe not that... maybe he got a fair criticism at times, but also I think that there's, when Texas goes back and looks 5-10 years down the road, maybe his career will be appreciated. I don't know if that makes any sense or not.
No, it does. But I also think, and I could be wrong, but I think it's tougher now to win a championship than it's ever been with this expanded playoff. You know, you got to keep guys healthy. And I think case in point, two teams, Steven, Alabama, own this sport. Not that long ago, about 5 years ago, they owned the sport. They didn't even make the 12-team playoff. And then Georgia, Probably should have went 3 national championships in a row. Missed out on that third one. And right now I feel like they're out of a bit of a crossroads. I don't think they're probably going to win at least one more, depending on how long Kirby stays there. You know, I'll give them at least one more national champion. I think they got more, probably more than that coming. But if you were to tell me Georgia goes the next 10 years and doesn't win one, that wouldn't shock me either. You know what I mean? Because I just think it's more difficult now. And Texas had a little bit of a window, and the window is still very much open, but things change quickly in this sport. And if Arch does not live up to the hype, then I don't think Texas comes close to a championship this year.
And also, I think we've kind of touched on this a little bit. I think in addition to the hype, I mean, there are, you know, how replacing 4 offensive line starters is not necessarily good. I think Texas has recruited well and develops well under Kyle Flood on the offensive line, but that is a lot of turnover there. And, you know, we saw Georgia this year, thought they were going to have one of the better offensive lines based upon returning personnel, didn't work out that way. So there are some other factors that are not in Arch's control that could be an issue this year. Like what happens if the receivers, we saw this at Georgia, like we thought those receivers were going to be great this year and they struggled to catch passes. So there's a lot of factors with Texas that are interesting. Like not surprising people are going to pick them to win the national championship. I don't necessarily disagree, but you know, the window is open, but it wouldn't take an offensive line injury, a receiver's not meeting their potential, and then all of a sudden you go from national championship contender to getting bounced in the quarterfinals or just missing it like Alabama this year.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's just so many variables. Yeah. And I think it's, you know, if, and we could sit here and what if everything, but I still, maybe I'm naive, but I think if, you know, like if Carson Beck doesn't get injured, like Georgia may have won it, you know? So yeah. It could be anything like that. In a championship game, your guy goes down and it can change everything. So I think we're just spinning our wheels at this point, Steven. You got anything else before we wrap this one up?
I enjoy doing this. And like I mentioned, I think it's going to be interesting to see over the next couple of months how this list changes. You know, once we get into spring ball, we get some other intel, we get it updated. But, you know, it's interesting to weigh the potential and the upside versus the proven and all the wild cards. This is a really good year for quarterbacks in the SEC and a lot to look forward to, I think, if you're these teams. You should have pretty solid quarterback play across the conference.
Well, I'm glad you had fun putting the list together, because I did not have fun hearing it. Now that I know who's at the top, cannot wait to tear to shreds your next ranking. But hey, before you go, as always, Steven, can you remind the folks how to follow you, how to find your work?
Absolutely. You can come and yell at me about quarterback rankings at Athlon Steven on Twitter. And you can check out all my work at Athlon Sports. And if you can, come over to Instagram and Facebook, Steven LCFB. If you'll come over and like those pages, I'd greatly appreciate it.
All right. Thank you so much, my friend. We'll catch you on the next one. Thank you, each and every one of you, for hanging out. And same, I guess I'll just repeat myself. We'll catch you on the next one.
Hey, buddy, this beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.